The gospel lesson today has one of the most misunderstood and misused verses in all the Bible. But before I get into that, let's look at the story. I think if I would have been there at Bethany when this happened, as the unmistakable fragrance filled the room, and suddenly, as everyone realized what Mary had done by breaking open this alabaster jar of perfume at Jesus' feet, I think if I would have been there, I would have asked a few questions myself. Not out of any evil motive. In the Gospel of John, as he tells the story, he obviously thinks Judas had an underhanded reason, wanted to steal the money. But if you look at Matthew and Mark, both of them tell this story as well. They mention that all of the disciples, not just Judas, but all of the disciples were indignant about the waste. I bet I would have been pretty indignant myself. I mean, why this waste? It's a good question to ask. Jesus was always talking about helping the poor. Why was Mary being so extravagant and so wasteful with this nard? Nard. Obviously, they did not have marketing departments back in the first century. I mean, today, they spend thousands and thousands of dollars doing research. They have focus groups and market research. They have companies that specialize in finding just the right name for whatever product you have. And they call this nard. I was remembering the first cologne I ever used as a young man. I'm not even sure I was shaving yet at the time, but of course you had to wear cologne. I wore Mon Triomphe. It's French. I had no idea what it meant, but I knew if I wore Mon Triomphe, the girls would go wild. Nard is not something I would have taken off the shelf. It's not exactly a common household name in the 21st century. But like myrrh and frankincense, which are more well known because both of those are mentioned in the Christmas story every year, in the ancient world, nard was highly sought after. It was very rare, very expensive. And yes, it was used first as a perfume. According to what I've read, it has a kind of earthy, musky scent. It's mentioned several times in the biblical poem in our Old Testament, Song of Solomon. In the first chapter, as a matter of fact, the bride says to her groom, "My nard gave forth its fragrance." And then she continues by saying, "My beloved to me is a bag of myrrh." I don't know. Try saying that to your significant other sometime. "You remind me of a bag of myrrh." Actually, I can't finish what it says here in Song of Solomon about this, because what it says a few chapters later about nard would probably be at least PG, if not R-rated. So we'll just have to move on. That is the sense that people had of what nard was. It was the kind of perfume, the kind of fragrance that would be used, very romantic, and again, very expensive. But it's also listed as one of the 11 different spices that was used to make the incense in the temple at Jerusalem. So all of that is the reason that it was so expensive. And this passage, as well as a parallel passage in Mark, tell us that this alabaster flask that Mary had would have cost 300 denarii. Now, a denarius was about a day's wages for a laborer back in that time. So 300 days' wages to go for this alabaster jar of nard. It would have been very expensive. And the fact that it was an alabaster jar tells us how expensive it was, too. It wasn't made out of clay, which more common stuff would be put in. The fact that the way that you opened an alabaster jar was to break off the tip. And of course, it did not have a screw top. So once you opened that, it was exposed to the air and it would begin to break down. So you had to use it. To pour such a thing on Jesus' feet was an unimaginable extravagance. So the disciples were right. What a waste. Jesus' response, despite their indignation, despite the possible mixed motives, let's say, of Judas, Jesus' response does not condemn Mary at all. Instead, Jesus says, well, she'll be able to use what's left for my burial. That must have set them back on their heels, as well as answering the question, what do you do with an open jar of nard? But then, in further reply to the objection that it could have been sold and the money used for the poor, he said, you always have the poor with you, but you will not always have me. And I think there are two separate but related teachings in this text that I'd like to look at here. The first one is this reference to his own imminent death and burial. You will not always have me, he says. I think that one of the reasons Jesus doesn't condemn this act of extravagance is because he knows, as a matter of fact, in the context of the Gospel of John, it's just a few chapters later that he will be arrested and tried and beaten and executed. So he knows what's coming. He knows that finally, on what we now celebrate as Easter Sunday, the disciples will understand how extravagantly God loves us. All too soon, the disciples will understand how generous God is with God's own love toward us, how lavish God is with love, that God is downright extravagant in the example shown in Christ's death and resurrection. So, as followers of Christ like Mary, we can't be too extravagant as we respond to that love. There's no such thing as being too extravagant in our devotion to Christ. So maybe the first question for us today as we come to the end of the Lenten season is, what would breaking nard on Jesus' feet mean for you today in your life as a Christian? Or more simply, what is the extravagant gift that you would bring to Christ? Now, of course, I'm tempted, since we're about to embark on a capital campaign here, to make some specific suggestions in that direction, but I won't do that. Instead, I'll say, look around you. Consider how extravagant this place is. This building is an expression of the devotion of the Christians who came here before us. Now, of course, someone might have asked, in 1888, the year that this sanctuary was completed and dedicated, 125 years ago, this coming fall we'll celebrate that anniversary, you could have asked when this building was dedicated, why this waste? The money that went even just for these windows could have been used to help the poor. And as I look back, I would say, I'm sure they were helping the poor. This was an immigrant congregation, and they helped all the immigrants as they were coming into the Lehigh Valley and into Allentown. So they helped people who had no means. But if they had added what they paid for these windows, instead just put clear glass in the window, saved those thousands of dollars, which would have been an amazing amount of money in those days, if they would have used that to continue to extend their gifts to the poor of their own age, that money would have been gone long about 1890. But this act of beauty that they committed, that act of charity would have ended, but this act of beauty that they committed continues to bless and inspire devotion even 125 years later. 125 years later, we could say that it is extravagant in its praise toward God. So the question comes back to us, what is the extravagant gift that you would bring back to God to show your devotion to Christ? Maybe you will answer that question differently as we look at the second teaching in this text. It flows from Jesus' comment, "The poor you always have with you." Now, this is the one that's the most misunderstood and misused verse of the Bible, I think. I'll nominate it for that. You may know that sometimes that phrase has been used to justify inaction or even the indifference toward the needs of the poor. Now, what does it matter what you do? You're always going to have poor people. Why bother to even try to help? As so often happens when people quote the Bible, they quote it out of context. These days, people may be quoting the Bible and not even know they're quoting the Bible. And in this case, the context, as any Jew in Jesus' day would have understood, the context came from the book of Deuteronomy in chapter 15, those verses that Jeff read for us. Did it seem a little blunt to you when he read those words? The King James Version sounds a lot nicer. Of course, just about anything said in the King James language sounds nice. "If there be among you a poor man, thou shalt not harden thine heart, nor shut thine hand." In the NRSV, it's a little bit more plain English. "Do not be tight-fisted or hard-hearted toward your needy neighbor." But it was really a little further on in that chapter that Jesus was quoting, or paraphrasing perhaps, the King James again, "The poor shall never cease out of the land." You hear the similarity to Jesus' words. He said, "The poor you always have with you." But again, listen to this in context. "The poor shall never cease out of the land. Therefore I command thee, saying, thou shalt open thine hand wide unto thy brother, unto thy poor, and unto thy needy in the land." The text really holds a simple lesson for us. The two things really become one lesson. Because God has shown such extravagant love and grace toward us in Jesus Christ, we are called to be extravagant in our devotion to Christ, and we are called to be extravagant in our service to those who are in need. The two go together in Jesus' thought and teaching. In Jesus' teaching, you simply cannot separate devotion to God from service to those in need. Last week, I was talking with several members of the Rotary Club from our district here. Some of you know I'm a member of the Allentown Rotary Club, and every once in a while, there are district gatherings, you know. It's a good group of people, though. They come from all walks of life and from many different religious traditions or no religious tradition. It just so happened we were discussing what's called a rotoplast mission. Now, rotoplast is a combination of the word, terrible word, but a combination of the word rotary and plastic surgery. There are international projects where teams go to underdeveloped countries around the world or even to third world countries where they simply don't have medical facilities where they are able to repair cleft palates for children. And these Rotary groups raise funds to pay for a surgical team to go, and then members of the Rotary also pay their own expenses and go as a part of the support team because it takes a lot of people. And in country, hundreds of people come. They can't all be seen, but hundreds of people come when they hear of one of these missions coming to their town. Now, if you're wondering why in the world they focus on cleft palates, of all things, that deformity not only means difficulty in speech and sometimes infections because the clefts are so bad, the deformities are so bad in some of these children that they continually have infections from them. But having that cleft palate not only means they have difficulty speaking, they get bullied. They can't go to school if there is one nearby. We heard the story of one girl who wasn't allowed to go out in her village without a bag over her head. They can't marry. They can't get a job. They're condemned to a life of poverty because of this birth defect. So somebody long ago came up with the idea to send these surgical teams. Well, after our meeting where we were talking about this and how these district clubs might raise some money to support these missions, I had one of those parking lot conversations after the meeting, and one man who himself is a police chief in one of the communities south of here, he told me about the first mission he went on. He just said, it was a life-changing thing for me. And then he said, Pastor Bob, I'm a born-again Christian. I'm a believer. But I have to tell you that going on this project was as life-changing for me as being born again. So I, of course, told him about my sermon in which I talk about being born again and again and again. That is what happens as we really come face to face with the people Jesus told us that we should be helping and serving. We're born again and again and again because each time, Jesus also told us, we are meeting Jesus in the people we serve. He said he was active in his church, but this is his mission now, and he's gone on 7 of these missions at his own expense, extravagantly spending his time and his energy and his money. He's combined his devotion to Christ with service to those who are most in need. Kind of like breaking open an alabaster jar of nard at Jesus' feet. How extravagant will you be in your devotion to Christ?